This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Well, today we have a remarkable and knowledgeable researcher with us. Kathleen Martin is back. She is the Director of Experiencer Research for the Mutual UFO Network. She has written 5 books about this subject, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, her latest one, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. And you're going to find out that Kathleen has an up-close and personal vision of exactly what that. The reason I think that Kathleen wrote Captured in the first place, and I'm just about to ask her this, is that she's the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. So she comes to this from a familial connection, and I know a lot of you are like me. You're close encounter witnesses, abductees, contactees, experiencers, whatever you want to call yourselves. But we all know this runs in families because it probably runs in yours as it does in mine. Kathleen, can you tell us first about your relationship with Betty and Barney?
Absolutely. Betty was my mother's older sister and the first person that Betty called when she and Barney returned from their interrupted journey through the White Mountains of New Hampshire on September 19th and 20th, 1961. It was the afternoon of September 20th when she called my mother. I was home from school for the afternoon. I was in the 7th grade and 13 years old at the time, and I became immediately fascinated by this and all of the questions. There was so much physical evidence in their case that was highly perplexing. Why were there a number of very shiny spots on the trunk of their car that were magnetic and had not been there the day before? And they connected this to a series of code-like buzzing sounds that were striking the trunk of their vehicle as the UFO hovered overhead the night before. Betty's dress was torn in several places, and she could not think of how that could possibly have happened, simply returning home from a vacation to Niagara Falls and Montreal. Barney's best dress shoes were so deeply scraped that he had to buy new shoes. He was a meticulous dresser. The watches that they were wearing on the trip had worked fine the night before. They'd checked them at 10:05 in the evening. But when they arrived home, the watches were broken. They never ran again. And the binocular strap that Barney had placed around his neck as he walked into a field, as this craft hovered 50 feet over the terrain and about 100 feet in the distance, was broken. And we know now why it broke, that Barney tore the binoculars away from his eyes, breaking the strap as he ran to the vehicle when he had the distinct impression that he was about to be abducted by these non-human entities that he was viewing through binoculars.
Now, in this case, this was so long ago, it wasn't something that a person might have anticipated or expected in any way.
That is absolutely true. Barney had no prior interest in UFOs. In fact, he thought the concept was ridiculous. Betty was a little open-minded. She wasn't certain, but she'd never read a book on the topic. Their case was the first scientifically investigated case in the United States.
And now we've come almost full circle with it in the sense that they were lambasted, lampooned, denied everything that is always done or was always done to public close encounter witnesses was done to them in spades. Now there's a highway marker where it happened. I think that's progress.
I think it's progress, too. And, you know, Betty and Barney had never intended to come forward with their story. They had a lot to lose. Not only were they an interracial couple in the 1960s, which was not entirely accepted in that time frame.
Yeah, I lived in the South in that time frame, and I had a black girlfriend at one point. I know whereof you're speaking.
Yes. And, you know, not only that, Betty was a social worker for the state of New Hampshire. Barney worked for the post office. They were actively involved in the civil rights movement. And in 1965, before the story was carried to the public as the result of a violation of confidentiality, he had been appointed to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission State Advisory Committee for the state of New Hampshire. It was a big appointment, and really the apex of his dream toward advancing civil rights for people of color and all people, in fact.
Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a little break, then we're going to get back. This is a really extraordinary in-depth story because Kathleen is not just a researcher. She's a direct experiencer as well. You can find out more about her and her work at Kathleen-Marden.com, Kathleen-Marden.com. And this book that we're going to get into, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. Kathleen not only is a researcher, but also direct experiencer. You couldn't find a better person to give us advice about that. I'm really eager to hear it. We'll be right back.
Ever wonder what the close encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
Listen to some words from one of our longtime subscribers.
As a subscriber of Dreamland for many years, it's been an incredible adventure and truly a Rosetta Stone for so many of the experiences that all of your listeners have had. Please join us. It's a fantastic ride. But I will say that certainly Dreamland does reflect something that I've always known, that man's mind mirrors a universe that mirrors man's mind. And no other place will you get this truth than on Dreamland. Come join us.
Some of the most thrilling, mind-opening interviews ever recorded are in the Dreamland Archive. Open your mind to Sir Lawrence Gardner's brilliant vision of the past. Listen to Russell Targ's phenomenal insights about ESP. Be inspired by Dr. Eben Alexander's stunning near-death experience. Listen to an actual recording from a plane as it was attacked by a gigantic flying disc. Be transported to a new level of inner grace with Whitley Strieber's meditations. Enjoy The Communion, Transformation, Majestic, Secret School, and Superstorm audiobooks, and so much more. The UnknownCountry.com subscriber section. As little as 10 cents a day. Priceless. War Day changed the way we think about nuclear war. Communion led millions to realize that they had encountered the visitors. Superstorm gave a word to the world that has become the byword of our time. The Key is among the most prophetic books ever written. And where can you get inside the mind that created all this? On UnknownCountry.com, where Whitley's life stories, his powerful meditations, his books, Communion, Transformation, The Secret School, and others are available in audio format, and so much more exclusive Whitley Strieber material. Join Whitley on the path to tomorrow. How? Subscribe to UnknownCountry.com today.
We're talking to Kathleen Marden. Her website, Kathleen-Marden.com, her book, her new book, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to do when you've been abducted. And she's written 5 books. And so when you, if you go on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or go wherever you get books, you will find more than one Kathleen Martin title. And this is really well worth getting into. Kathleen's got a lot to say, and she's an experiencer who also is a very grounded researcher. Kathleen, let's move on from Betty and Barney now into your story, because you also are a close encounter witness, or I don't know what you call yourself.
I am, and it's an extension of the Betty and Barney Hill story. It began consciously when I was 17 years old, and Betty and Barney were doing a series of experiments, CE5 experiments, with a team of scientists. Betty was attempting to call in a UFO, and these scientists gave Betty scripts, which she was to read over and over again every evening in the hope of sending telepathic messages to these non-human entities that had abducted her and my Uncle Barney. She was somewhat successful in doing this. Sometimes the scientists would go to a certain location that they had asked the UFO to appear in, and they saw the craft. She was also attempting to have a craft come in and land on my grandparents' farm. I grew up across the street from my grandparents, Betty's parents, in Kingston, New Hampshire. And in February of 1966, Betty, my grandmother, my mother, my brother, myself, and a family friend had a close encounter with a craft on a nearby pond, Country Pond, in Newton, New Hampshire. The craft initially appeared to be hovering over the ice. It lifted up and ascended high into the air. It then descended vertically in kind of a rocking motion. It then stopped and lifted up over a tree as we stood on the ice watching it. It then moved away from us. We got back into the car and followed it, attempting to locate it again. We drove down through a grove, across a bridge, and onto an island, turned around, and then stopped on the bridge on the connecting the island to the peninsula. All of us, except for my mother, were looking in one direction, she in the other. And suddenly, my mother yelled. What she had seen was 2 craft, disc-shaped craft, hovering over the water. It was over the ice, actually. And one of them had projected a blue light that came toward her in a measured way. She screamed. We ran, got into the car, and we left that area. But before we left, Betty wanted to stop again at the other part of the lake. We did stop. We didn't get out of the car. We just looked. We didn't see the craft. And then we watched a light that might have been the craft as we made our way back to our home in Kingston, New Hampshire. So the unusual thing was that my grandfather and Barney, who had been waiting for us at my grandparents' farm, had stated that they wished they had gone with us because they attempted to watch television that night, and all they got was interference. We wondered if this was related to this UFO sighting. We also wondered why we had arrived home so late. Then, 2 months later, a craft landed on my grandparents' farm. It landed 250 feet from my childhood home and was observed by my grandmother and by a neighbor who was a commercial pilot returning home from work in the middle of the night. There was physical trace evidence left on the ground. It was scientifically investigated. What we never revealed until recently was that my mother and I found ourselves on that craft. It was terrifying, highly perplexing. I wanted more information. I wanted help. But my family told me never to reveal what happened because there were people out there who would attempt to destroy my life, any future career I hoped to have. And so I maintained this secrecy.
And of course,
for many years.
They would say that because of what they knew had happened to Betty and Barney.
Absolutely.
So that was
Absolutely.
The reason. But, you know, Kathleen, we're going to return, folks, and go through, obviously, this story in great detail. But we're going to do it a little later because there's a bit of ground we have to cover first. And I want to start with this question of is there some kind of organized effort to suppress this stuff, or is it just a kind of cultural reaction to something that seems completely improbable and it's so hard to believe, or a mixture of both? Do you have a thought about that?
Yes, and I wrote about this in my book with Stanton Friedman.
Yes, I know. I read it.
And Flying Saucers, based upon years of archival research that we did and that I did at the American Philosophical Society, which housed Philip Klass's files. Dr.
Kathleen,
Donald.
Yes. Did you hear that? All that noise?
Yes, I'm hearing it now.
Okay, folks, is it coming from your end, Kathleen?
I don't know. It's stopped now.
Yeah. Okay. We have this so often on Dreamland especially when we begin to talk about this subject, abductions. I'm just leaving it in the show from now on. I'm not going to clean it out. So, folks, you can hear for yourselves. There's nothing going on here. There's apparently nothing going on at Kathleen's end. But as soon as she started talking about this, look at what happened. And I think it's connected because it happens every time. Okay, well, let's just go back. If you can continue on where you were. But before we do that...
Somebody doesn't want me to continue,
yeah.
I suppose.
Very clear. Very clear. Somebody wants us to think there's somebody who doesn't want you to. You know, it's so complicated. This is a hall of mirrors. We can never be sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, free Dreamlanders, assuming we're still alive at the end of the break, we're going to continue at that point.
When should you subscribe to UnknownCountry.com? How about right now? Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab on the masthead. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account.
And do we ever need you right now? And do you ever need us? The new unknowncountry.com is beautiful. It is fully functional. The whole archive is working. It's full of amazing stuff. Plus, this is the only place like it in the world. Keep it going. It's up to you. Go to unknowncountry.com. You know what you have to do. It's only a few pennies a day. It's not a big sacrifice, but it means an awful lot.
There are hundreds of charitable organizations in the world, but you have to have a sharp eye to be sure your money is going to where it's needed and not into the pockets of overpaid administrators. That's why Whitley Strieber and UnknownCountry.com support the Mercy Corps. It's non-sectarian, it's lean and efficient, and it goes everywhere on earth that people are in need. When you contribute, you can be sure that most of your dollar goes right to the homeless, the starving, and the desperate. Go to Unknown Country and click on the Mercy Corps Foundation ad on the left side of your homepage. A $10 gift can put food on a child's plate and shoes on his feet. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Mercy Corps.
Whitley Strieber's nonfiction is magical, powerful, and thought-provoking. From communion to the afterlife revolution, there is no body of work like it in the world. Nothing even approaches it. And not only that, his wonderful fiction, from The Wolfen to his latest novel, New, offers reading and listening entertainment that you will never forget. And where do you find all this in one place? At Strieber.com. That's where. Every Whitley Strieber book available for sale is there. So don't wait. Go to Strieber.com and start exploring. There's only one Whitley and only one place to find all his work. Strieber.com. Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
We're still here. We are talking to Kathleen Martin, extraterrestrial contact, what to do when you've been abducted. And that apparently is not a subject that somebody is too happy we are talking about. Her website is kathleen-martin.com. Now, if you can you go back to where we were, or do you want me to reset? Kathleen?
Yes, I'm here.
Let's try going back to where you were.
Okay. Okay. I have done a great deal of research at the American Philosophical Society, where arch debunker Philip Klass's files are stored. Dr. Donald Menzel, who was a government-connected astrophysicist, who was the head of the observatory at Harvard, also worked for the NSA and was mentioned in the MJ-12 files as having been on that committee. Also, many others. Edward Condon, who, of course, ran the Dr. Edward Condon, who ran the scientific study on UFOs. Robert Lowe, who actually carried out the study because Dr. Condon didn't want to do the work. He was just the director. And others who were part of what appears to be a long-term cover-up that was carried out, having the appearance that it was scientific, yet knowing that in the end, no saucer would be found. So there has been a very long cover-up among people who were closely connected to the federal government. And also, there were individuals who might have been psychologists who had been fed this disinformation and then speculated, not knowing who people like Betty and Barney really were, their backgrounds, their psychological profiles, but making an erroneous assumption.
Exactly. And they were led to do this. You know, I knew Walter Orr Roberts, who was the president emeritus of NOAA when I knew him, and he told me that he had been approached to be the head of the Condon Committee before Condon had, and it became obvious to him that it was a foregone conclusion. There was no question about what the outcome would be, and yet the research hadn't been done yet, so he declined. Condon did not, and took the cash. So, you know, it was never intended to be anything except a whitewash and a cover-up, which it is. But only in the introduction, because if you read the actual stories, there's lots of very mysterious reports.
Yes, absolutely. And Dr. Edward Condon was a member of the National Academy of Sciences, which you know is very politically connected as well. And in the introduction to the book, you read Edward Condon's personal opinion and the false information that he fed to the National Academy of Sciences. And it was all based upon a plan that was pre-planned and coordinated by the U.S. Air Force. All of that information is, in fact, fiction and flying saucers. And the outcome had been determined before the study was done. But there are some very good scientific cases done and written about in the Condon report. And a follow-up study indicated that 30% of those cases were true unknowns. And we know that when we have a true unknown, meaning that it cannot be identified as anything originating from this planet, that it deserves additional scientific study. That didn't happen.
Oh, absolutely not. It's still not happening. It is happening, actually, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
We know that now because of the release of those U.S. Navy videos. Obviously, it's happening behind the scenes, and we're still not being told what's going on. But I don't want to go down that path so much today because that's not the real thrust of this book and of your work. I want to ask a question. In Chapter 2, am I an abductee, a contactee, an experiencer? Now, this is a complicated question. I'm not going to just ask you the chapter heading. And the reason it's such a complicated question is that the first part of it is, what is going on? Because your experiences and some of mine and some of, and maybe in some cases, all of many of my listeners' experiences who've had contact have been very physical, but not everything. And sometimes it's been very, very harsh and terrifying. Other times it's been quite wonderful. I have both things in my past. I had a dreadful experience at the beginning, but now I don't. I have very good experiences. I welcome them now. But can you tell us a little bit about what your thinking is? It's quite fascinating. I can tell you that already because I've read the book, folks. What are the dimensions of this? And then we'll go on to the question of whether or not you can tell it's happened to you. But what are the dimensions of it? What are they, the creatures, the beings?
What I have discovered is that they appear to be interdimensional, and that they appear to use technology to lower their vibrational frequency, to be seen in our three-dimensional reality. Yet, they also possess the technology to move humans through solid surfaces, most preferably closed windows, but sometimes walls and ceilings, to their environment. And I had to ask physicists about this because my aunt and I used to argue about this, and she believed that anyone who said that this was possible must have been making this up or believing in something that couldn't be possible. It was like magic to her, but she didn't know that any sufficiently advanced technological device would appear to be magic to us primitive earthlings who don't have that kind of technology. I asked three theoretical physicists, and they each told me that theoretically, everything has a vibrational frequency, and that all that needed to be done to pass atoms through atoms is for the frequency and the phase to be aligned. Then the atoms could interpenetrate. And they said, remember that 99.9% of the atom is empty space. So this was not only quite possible, but I learned that it actually had been accomplished on a very small scale using neutrinos in a scientific laboratory.
So it is possible then. It is certainly something that can be done. And I've seen it. You've seen it and experienced it, I'm sure. Yeah. A lot of people have. So it's there. It's real. But do you think, you say they're all interdimensional? Because I just wonder, you know, like what happened to Betty and Barney seems so physical.
Yes, because they do come into our physical realm. Yet they seem, from my observation, to have some kind of technology that can cause them to fade in and fade out of our existence, that they will seem physical. They even leave physical evidence. Yet there are so many questions we have. And I do believe that there are other entities that are entirely interdimensional. And from the Earth's collective consciousness, or the astral realm, you might say. But I do believe that there are extraterrestrials who possess this technology. Maybe there are some who don't have possess the technology, who take maybe thousands upon thousands of years to arrive here, or maybe less. Maybe by hopping from one planet to another planet, such as we are attempting to do in our space exploration.
Yes.
But, you know, I think that there are many here who have the technology to use this interdimensional kind of technology as well.
Well, apparently so. And, you know, if they have that technology, they could be just as physical as we are and able to move back and forth between this and a parallel universe that's right here all around us.
And they could.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take another break now for our free Dreamlanders, and we are talking to Kathleen Martin. Her new book, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do If You've Been Abducted, or When You've Been Abducted, because a lot of people get abducted, let's face it. Her website is kathleen-martin.com, and I must apologize to everybody for the large amount of interference that has taken place. But if you listen closely, you'll find that it comes up mostly when Kathleen is talking about things like her abduction and things like who might be behind suppressing the information. And that's very typical on Dreamland. Often when those subjects are discussed, there's interference, which is telling us something, I think. We'll be right back.
The new unknown country is here, and it has so much to offer. Our huge archive of Dreamland, plus the full run of William Henry's revelations, Anne Streber's mysterious powers and her incredible contactee interviews, Whitley's Communion, Secret School, Transformation, and Majestic ebooks, his powerful meditations, and so much more. Plus, every week, the full subscriber versions of Whitley's Dreamland, Mike Clellan's The Unseen, and monthly, Jeremy Vaney's The Experience. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto-renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account. Plus, a live chat every week on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific, and so much more. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and subscribe. Keep this incredible site going and have a great time doing it.
Unknowncountry.com subscribers have access to a vast treasury of information. Listen to what Dr. Robert Schock said. He's an expert on the past, and for that reason, he also knows a great deal about the future.
We are re-entering, as you say, a debris field, and when you have a debris field like this, it enters the solar system, it energizes the solar system as you have things going into the sun. Even clouds of dust particles, for instance, it will energize the sun, it will destabilize the sun. This is what we saw at the end of the last ice age, in approximate terms, about 13,000 years ago.
And just in the past few days, more enormous meteors have been sighted, and this goes on continuously. more and more every year. We live in a time of great change in a world that doesn't like to look at things as they are. UnknownCountry.com offers extraordinary information, a vast archive that you cannot find anywhere else. Subscribe today. Help keep this website going, because without you, there is and can be no us. Go to UnknownCountry.com right now. Click on the subscribe tab. Get started.
I did a show last night and there was no interference.
Yeah, I know. It's just like that. Okay, we're back. We're talking to Kathleen Marden, extraterrestrial contact, what to do when you've been abducted. And in the third half hour, we're going to get into what is really one of the most extraordinary abduction and close encounter accounts in the world, which is Kathleen's own personal story. But before we go there, we want to talk about what to do, because you're, after all, working on the whole abduction phenomenon in MUFON. You are the director of research. If someone walks into your office and says, I think I have been abducted, what's your first step?
We have 30 individuals who speak over the telephone or via Skype with people who suspect that they've been abducted, and they do this on a day-to-day basis. Anyone who wants to speak confidentially with a member of my team need only to go to MUFON.com, and scroll down to the Experiencer Research Team. They can click on an icon that will lead them to the Experiencer Research Team's page. And then from there, they can complete a simple 30-question questionnaire. This will lead to a conversation with a specialist on my team who is a non-judgmental listener, who can offer advice if they want it, and also has a list of vetted therapists, both psychotherapists and hypnotherapists, depending on what the experiencer is looking for, with whom they can enter into a private for-pay relationship. This information does not need to be given to the Mutual UFO Network or the member of my team. It's their personal, private information. What we are there to try to help people. We have so much evidence and are so aware of the contact phenomenon that we don't need to collect more evidence. But some people do want to tell more about their story. They will send us photographs of the marks on their bodies, these unusual patterned marks that they find after a contact experience. They will send us photographs of a patterned mark that appeared under a UV light in a dark room where it was photographed without a flash. They will send evidence to team members, knowing that these people are there to support them on a day-to-day basis.
Now, I want to go to a specific case that you bring up, the case of Matt, and to talk a little bit about that case and how this works in terms of a life experience, because I think it's a very illustrative case. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your first meeting? Matt's a pseudonym, by the way, folks. I don't know who this really is, but Kathleen obviously does. But can you tell us a little bit about your first meeting with Matt, or how he came into your life, and then a little bit about his story?
Yes, Matt had seen me on a television show that he was watching, and he had these extraordinary experiences on his property. He was the owner of a small airport in the Southwest, He had been a commercial pilot for many, many years. He had no interest or contact with UFOs, but one night he heard people outside his hangar, and he lived in an apartment while he was going to build a house on the property. And so he went outside to find out what was going on. He always worried about teenagers being out there drinking and destroying property. But they weren't teenagers. They were adults. And they were pointing to lights in the sky. He had never seen anything like that before. They were very, very bright, white, and beautiful. And he was enthralled with what he was seeing. He reasoned that if he could call in these craft, that he would be able to sit down just like humans do and have a meeting, that he would be able to find out information, and maybe he could connect them with others. He was completely ignorant about this phenomena.
Yeah, I'm laughing, and I'm sure all my listeners know why, but it's a great story. We'll go on.
So he went up into his control tower. He started using laser pointers. He became obsessed, and eventually these craft started to come in. He would hit them with a laser pointer, very wide, broad beam, and they would respond to him. The next thing he did is he built a landing spot on his field where, using a big red X and a circle, he thought, well, gee, here's a place where they can come in and land, and we can sit down and have a conversation. He had no idea that they were telepathic. And then they did start to come in. They hovered above the ground. They landed. He had close-up sightings.
And pictures. I mean, there's a picture in the book that he took.
Absolutely. He took pictures. He was documenting all of this. He had cameras everywhere, and then they started to take him. And that was not something that he had bargained for. They never had that sit-down meeting, Whitley, as you know, they never do.
No.
They started to take him. One night he had gotten up in the middle of the night, and he realized that he was no longer tired, so he decided to call his sister, who was living in another country. And then he went to the door to the hangar and just, for some reason, automatically opened it. And down below him were three small, very pale, kind of whitish-looking entities wearing silver suits and what he described as roper boots, being from the Southwest. And he said that they turned toward him just as if a gate had swung toward him. And then he noticed a taller being that didn't look like them, who was standing against the wall of the hangar. And he was extremely startled by this. He immediately slammed the door, he locked it, and he went back to bed. And he probably didn't realize that they could have walked right through that door.
No.
And have taken him, and he woke up after that had occurred. And this happened to him time and time again. He was extremely fearful of this. He didn't know what to do. The Mutual UFO Network investigated, and their boots on the ground investigators did observe an unusual, unconventional object not too far in the distance. There were paranormal investigators who were called in when the paranormal activity began. And in the end, everyone left shaking their heads. The UFO investigators said, oh, this is paranormal. We don't investigate that. My team does, and I do. And then there were paranormal investigators who said, well, this is UFO related. We don't investigate UFOs. We're paranormal investigators. So he was stuck between a rock and a hard place.
And then the sun went down.
Yes, it
exactly.
Absolutely did.
So here's this fascinating arc with this with Matt. He starts out, he sees something, he becomes interested, he attracts it with a laser pointer, which a lot of people have done. That's I've known people have been doing that for many years. And but before you know it, his whole attitude changes. And now he's frightened. Now, can you explain, do you think, why that arc occurred? Because it looks like as this got closer and closer to him, he became more and more unable to handle it. Would that be the case?
Absolutely. And not only that, it expanded to paranormal activity. He started to observe interdimensional beings, what we think of as ghosts. And he knew that a couple of women had actually died in crashes at that airport way back in the 40s. And they were dressed in 1940s clothing. One of them was crying and carrying a baby. He started to observe what seemed to be time slips or breaches in the space-time continuum.
When you say that exactly, can you describe one?
Yes, I did mention one in the book. It was after his family had begun to believe that he had lost it and wanted him to have a psychiatric evaluation. And he said, just give me a chance to prove that this is real. So his mother stayed with him. They looked out the window, and there, instead of the airport, they saw woolly mammoths grazing on a grassy plain.
I wanted, obviously, folks, for her to tell you that story. Okay, then what happened?
Well, he did all that he could to try to make it go away. He had a relationship with a man who was a born-again Christian, and he convinced him that all of this was demonic. And he did, in fact, have some negative activity. He was sitting at his desk one night doing paperwork. His shirt was off, and he felt a stinging on his chest. And he looked down and observed three deep gashes appearing on his chest. It took about a month for them to heal. And then his health began to decline. He became a born-again Christian. He was going to church. He was a Catholic, and he was using holy water and saying the rosary. He did everything appealing to God to stop this from happening, but it continued. And as it continued, his health declined, unfortunately. And in the end, he escaped with his life, losing everything just to get away from that situation that he was in.
Now, when you say he escaped losing everything, what did he do to escape?
He left.
He
got into his car and he abandoned everything. He left that area and he went to live with his mother and stepfather in another area. And unfortunately, he had made several attempts to leave, and each time he became too ill, and he ended up in the hospital. And as I was investigating his case and attempting to help him, he became deathly ill again. He was admitted to the hospital, where he passed away.
an extraordinary and extremely sad story.
Yes.
Now, in my particular case, it didn't, you know, they followed us. When we left, they followed us. They came with us and left the area where we had been. And they're not there now. They're not there in the cabin in upstate New York. They're here in Santa Monica, though, for sure. So it varies. It definitely varies. Now, I want to ask you where you come out on this, because as you point out in your book, there are so many different shadings of this. There are people who are having extraordinary experiences and people who are just being, like Matt, simply literally hounded to death. It's so complicated, Kathleen. Where do you come out? Or can you give us some perspective?
It is extremely complicated. If you're familiar with the Skinwalker Ranch, which I suspect that you are, Whitley.
Sure I am. And listeners, just so you know, let me remind them just briefly in case somebody doesn't remember. The Skinwalker Ranch is a ranch bought by Robert Bigelow in, I believe, Utah. Is that correct?
Yes, that
in
is
which
correct.
A lot of paranormal activity took place. And he sent scientists to study it. He bought the ranch and had them live there for quite a while studying it. And I had Colm Kelleher, who was the head of this or involved in this project, on Dreamland a while back. So if you're a subscriber, you can just go to the search engine, type in Kelleher or Colm, C-O-L-M. I'm sure there's only one in the search engine, and you'll get that story. And it's quite fascinating. But go ahead, Kathleen.
But what I wanted to say is that Matt's case was very, very much like the activity that was taking place at the Skinwalker Ranch. And we have just recently learned that the money given to Robert Bigelow to have a scientific team study the activity on this ranch was funded through the Advanced Aerospace Identification Program run out of the Pentagon. It came from federal funding from Congress, approved by Congress. And I find it extremely interesting that to know that the government has an interest in this, because it is so complex. This is not simple. It is not nuts and bolts. It is not all positive. It is not all negative. It falls all along the spectrum.
All along the spectrum. Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a 15-minute break, and then we're going to come back. And I just heard for the first time about the funding of the Skinwalker Ranch. I thought it was funded directly by Bigelow. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And then later in the show, we're going to get back to Kathleen's extraordinary personal experiences. We just touched the edge of that at the beginning, but we're talking to a really unique human being here. This is a skilled researcher who has many years in this field and has done some extremely important work. I mean, it now, because of Kathleen, you can go to the MUFON website, as she described, and you can actually get to somebody who will interact with you in a rational manner, no matter what you've got to say. That's a big step. There's another organization Kathleen is involved in, we'll talk about too briefly, called FREE, which is in some ways similar, in some ways different. But right now, we'll be right back.
OneUnknownCountry.com subscriber says, "The subscriber offering has blossomed into an indispensable tool for my spiritual growth. Unknown Country has revitalized my sense of awe and wonder. I am very happy to participate in this exciting adventure." Listen to what another one has to say.
"I've been a subscriber to Unknown Country from almost the beginning. I get information there I can get nowhere else on the web."
And think of what you get. Commercial-free access to every Dreamland since 2004. Hundreds of special interviews, the astonishing meditations of Whitley Strieber, a small collection of UFO videos, but one that is rock solid authentic, unlike so much you find elsewhere. Plus, the satisfaction of knowing that you support the best edge science website in the world.
Unknown Country, genuinely new, genuinely credible, like nothing else in the world. Subscribe today. We need you. And you'd be surprised. Once you start, you'll realize you need to be a part of this community, too. Click on that subscribe tab today.
Every week, over 30,000 people get the free unknowncountry.com newsletter. Keep up with the latest about some of the world's most amazing stories. News you cannot get elsewhere. Sign up on unknowncountry.com. We keep all email addresses strictly private. The unknowncountry.com newsletter. Unique in the world.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
We're talking to Kathleen Marden. Her website, kathleen-marden.com. Her new book, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. Not only is it full of fascinating stories and chapters, it's also very wise. And there are sets of questionnaires in this that are really, really very helpful to it, because as you go through this and you read these questions, these lists of questions, it helps you to focus on what might be going on in your own life. Now, Kathleen, for the break, you made a very surprising announcement that the federal government was actually funding the Skinwalker Ranch project. That surprises me because this is not UFO. It's paranormal. Now, what in the world would they be thinking to do that?
Well, I think that they are attempting to understand what is actually occurring. Is this actually interdimensional? Do these entities come from different dimensions not far from us, or are they extraterrestrial? How is this, all of this phenomena interrelated? It appears to be in some way. They're looking beyond the nuts and bolts to how these craft that are seen and photographed, videotaped on radar, observed by military pilots, can make moves that in the sky that beyond our laws of physics. If we were in those craft, we would be smushed and dead in a moment. Yet, the craft appear to be intelligently controlled. They can do all sorts of things that we can't do. And what's funny to me is, if you know the early history of the government's interest in all of this, they knew this information back in the 1940s and the early 50s. They did studies then, very good studies, but then they suppressed the information. So it appears that we're just looking at this now. But they have gone beyond what they were doing in the 40s now to the investigation of the paranormal, of these possible space-time continuum slips where prehistoric animals are seen, to really take a good look at this, to attempt to understand what's going on. And, you know, being the military, if you are a country that possesses this kind of advanced technology, you control the world. And
yes,
you know, that's part of our government's mindset.
And also part of why they keep it secret. And I think that they diminish the impact and the experience of being alive by keeping their interest in this secret, because most of the scientific and intellectual community just scoffs at it because they don't know that what's actually going on under the surface. And that's unfortunate. You mentioned prehistoric animals a second time, and I'm I'm reminded of the fact that the beginning, when the scientists were first coming to the Skinwalker Ranch, as Colm Kelleher reports in his book about this, a huge wolf came up out of a marsh and it jumped into a goat pen while the ranch family was still there. And they shot at it and threw it, and it ended up running back into the marsh. But later the scientists were able to determine by the tracks it left that it had weighed 300 pounds. And yet, even though it had that solidity, the gunshots apparently had no real effect on it, no major effect on it. Now, that wolf I recognized when I read Colm's book immediately. It was a dire wolf from the Pleistocene, just yeah. like getting back to Matt and his mother peering through their window, and they see a woolly mammoth. Now, I have spent recently on an Indian reservation. My listeners have already heard this story, so I'll just touch it very briefly. Where I was literally in two worlds at the same time for 3 days. And the other world was very much like this, except it was somehow much less lived in, I would say. And while I didn't see any ice sheets or anything, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there isn't a parallel universe where the animals of the Pleistocene haven't gone extinct because there aren't as many human beings there or something like that. Yeah. But that it's quite real, and that, of course, if the government could figure out a way to get into it or to move back and forth, the power that would confer would be fantastic.
Absolutely. And we now know from this evidence that time is not linear. This has been studied for many, many years, but this is some pretty good evidence that time is not linear, that we can live in the past, the present, and the future.
So we end up in a situation where we're talking about living in the past and the present and the future. We're talking about other universes that intersect with this one. We're talking about the government knowing this and trying to figure it out. We're talking about all kinds of things that are in some way connected to Betty and Barney being taken aboard a UFO as if it was an entirely physical experience. I don't think that it even occurred to them that it wasn't.
No, it didn't.
No, because in fact it was. And yeah. I'm sure a lot of my listeners will agree that their experiences, like my first experiences, were extremely physical.
Yeah.
Now, we talked a little bit about why that might be and how they could maybe make themselves more dense or something. But we didn't talk about the opposite possibility. Could they be basically from here, but already have accomplished things like the ability to travel into parallel universes and to make themselves less dense? And I'll tell you why I ask that. One of the experiences at my cabin, my son and I were coming up across a little hill that led to the cabin right as a being was leaving it, just at dawn. And as it came out of the front door and ran down the deck and then across right in front of our eyes, it was translucent. But then it ran off into the woods, and you could see it darting back and forth as it avoided the trees, moving at breakneck speed, literally very fast. And it had been in the living room, and two people who had been sleeping in the living room about 2 hours earlier had seen it briefly, and then it had disappeared. And then as we came up to the house, it reappeared. Now, that looks more like technology to me somehow than it does a being who's essentially from another world. Because if he was from another world, why didn't he just go back into that world? Oh, I forgot to say something. As it left, a huge amount of heat in the living room, so much so that the people in the bed, in the convertible couch, thought it was on fire. And later, a physicist explained to me that if it had been wearing something that could bend light, it could have been invisible, but there would have been a lot of heat involved in maintaining that gravity, that bending of gravity like that. And that would be why when it left, it would A, leave behind a lot of heat, and B, be translucent, because it had reduced the amount of light it was bending because it had gotten too hot inside the suit. Now, again, I'm talking about technology of something that's from here. Mm-hmm. Is that a possibility too, do you think?
Anything is possible.
Anything.
None of us has the answer to all of these questions. It's the search that is so fascinating.
Yes, it certainly is. And the fact that we don't have the answer is, Annie used to always say, the best questions make our minds bigger. And this is a really good question.
Yes.
Now, I want to just briefly, before we end the first this segment of the show, you're also on the board of the organization called FREE. Could you tell us a little bit about FREE's work?
Absolutely. FREE is a consciousness-oriented, academic-oriented organization. It is comprised primarily of PhD scientists, academics, and lay researchers, a few respected lay researchers. Mary Rodwell is one. I'm another. And we have been studying this, and our scientists have been developing hypotheses on this for some time now. It came into development because the person who formed the organization, Ray Hernandez, who is a Miami attorney, had a highly unusual experience himself. It involved a tiny dog that they had, he and his wife had, and the dog had suffered what the vet thought might have been a stroke and had become paralyzed. They had made the decision to have the dog put down on Monday morning as soon as the vet's office opened. This was on Sunday morning. His wife is Catholic and was praying and praying and praying for healing for the dog. She got up, she carried the dog downstairs, and she dropped to her knees and started praying. When she saw what appeared to be a little disc-shaped object in the corner of the room, she then ran up and told Ray that he had to come downstairs and see this. By the time he descended the stairs, he was able to see his wife and dog disappear before his eyes. And he also saw kind of a shimmering, kind of fuzzy entity that he believed might have been an ET standing in the room. The next thing he knew, he lost consciousness for 45 minutes. And when he woke up, his wife and his dog were there again. But this time, his dog was running and jumping around the room. She was no longer paralyzed. This was so perplexing to him. And the fact that his wife was continuing to have these UFO sightings, that he wanted to learn more. And he was so enthusiastic about this and so professional that he was able to attract Dr. Edgar Mitchell and several scientists who agreed to join his organization to work on this problem and also on consciousness, because they believed that it all came under the umbrella of consciousness studies. I'm part of this organization, have been since, I believe it was early 2014, FREE completed a major study on nearly 4,000 experiencers I have also completed a study through the Mutual UFO Network on experiencers, attempting to identify commonalities that experiencers share. Free has recently published its first book. It has nearly 800 pages. I have a chapter in that book. It's titled Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence.
I have a copy of it right in my library. I'm looking right at it as we talk. Ray has been on Dreamland, folks, and if you're interested in learning more, you can either go to experiencer.org, which is Free's website, or you can also listen to the fascinating interview I did with Ray by simply, putting F-R-E-E or Hernandez, probably would, or both words, into the search engine and clicking on search, and you'll probably find the show. And you can listen, and it's really quite fascinating. So you see, the bottom line here is we're in a very different space now than we were before. There's a lot of things are available to the close encounter witness now that have a very solid grounding. You can get involved with MUFON, you can get involved with Free, and you will come up against professionals who will treat you in the way you deserve to be treated, which is as a human being dealing with a very perplexing and often very difficult experience. And that's the way it always should have been from the beginning, instead of having to face Philip Klass and those reprobates. I know a lot about some of those guys that I'm not going to ever say on the air, but they were not a very good group of people for the most part.
They were not.
No. The one called Amazing Randy and Philip Klass have got some answering to do before God that goes quite far beyond the UFO skepticism. But in any case, that's neither here nor there. Free Dreamlanders, thank you for being with us. Please become subscribers. Get involved, because this is going, as the planet becomes more and more unstable, the visitors are coming closer and closer to us, for better or for worse. If you've ever had any touch of this experience, you should join the website and get involved in what is happening here. Thank you very much, in any case, for being with us. Kathleen Marden's book is Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. Her website is kathleen-marden.com. And when we get back, we're going to be talking more about Kathleen's own experiences, and which is really one of the most remarkable stories out there. And the most remarkable thing about it is she's also such a skilled researcher. What a blessing to have both of those things in one person.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.